I've learned from amazing people and everything. And I think it's, there's so much to learn riding. There isn't 10 lifetimes that you can learn it all, and all the different horses and all the different issues and all the different, there isn't enough time. So the more I think people can go out and become sponges for all this information, I think is amazing. I always tell all my students too, take as many classes from many people as you can, even the ones you don't think are the good classes. I learn more from the bad than the good.
Hi everyone, it's Tracy from Equestrian Elements Life Coaching, bringing you the latest episode of Hitting Your Stride. I'm super excited to welcome today's guest to the podcast, dressage rider Yvonne Losos de Muniz of the Dominican Republic. For the better part of 20 years, Yvonne has been notching one achievement after another in what has been an already impressive riding career. This dressage rider in the early 2000s was busy winning medals at competitions ranging from the Central American and Caribbean Games in El Salvador to a bronze medal in the Pan Am Games in her home country of the Dominican Republic. As the years have gone by, Yvonne keeps getting better. She became the first Dominican rider to both qualify for and participate in the Olympics when she took part in the Rio Games in 2016. She followed that up with a return visit to the Olympics in Tokyo in 2021 and placing 22nd. And in 2022 has been a stellar season for her as well, competing in the FEI World Cup Finals in Germany, where she placed 10th, as well as competing in the FEI World Championships in Denmark. And this year saw Yvonne see her FEI ranking climb to 27th. The affiliations and recognitions are numerous. She'll be the FEI Board Dressage Rider Representative as of November 2022 and a member of the Board of Directors for the International Dressage Riders Club, and she's earned the FEI Gold Medal Badge of Honor, the highest athlete distinction given by the International Federation. No small feat for an athlete competing in a sport for a country not known for dressage. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. It was quite an honor for her to spend some time with me. Her candor and her philosophy on her journey and the sport that she loves and the horses that she loves and the coaching that she loves to do are very obvious in this conversation. So I really hope you enjoy it. So here we go. There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade, something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. Well, thank you, Yvonne, for being here on Hitting Your Stride. Thank you for taking the time to joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Tracy, so much for inviting me. It's an honor to be here being interviewed by you. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Yes. All right. So let's just jump back into this. How did you get started in dressage? And if you look back at all that you have achieved, how would you say you've changed as a rider throughout the years?
Well, I mean, I did start on my little black pony on the plains of Africa, and I've ended up in the international dressage ring. So it's quite a very different pathway that I've taken. I think from a rider, competitive rider point of view, over the years, I've really learned how to be a humble, patient person in general. I think overall. And it's also really helped me learn to be prepared for the unexpected all the time. For myself and my students and everybody, I try and integrate not just my teaching to the horses, it's also to life in general. I mean, the way I've as you know, in the horse, when you're dealing with these horses, it is, you never know what's going to happen. And I never assume I know is also, or I'm right. So it's really helped me. It's really in everything. It makes you sit back and really think when I'm training, when I went out through the training of the horses, I'm a totally different trainer now than I was 20, 25 years ago. I mean, I would say totally different ends of the spectrum.
Okay. Can you say what would be one thing? Would it be the patience? Would it be the humbleness? What would you say you've learned the most?
Less is more. Like less is way more. Like you give these, when you give a horse a chance to learn and aid, you know, as we teach a dog with a command to say sit and they sit, well, you touch a horse here and say, learn what this means. And that aid actually becomes a command and aid, like it is, it would be a word. When I've learned that my aids were not more pressure, more poking, more pulling, it was actually that the horse understood that when I touched it at that part of the body, it meant it need to do this movement, whatever it was I was teaching. And the patience then through repetition to teach them to understand what I wanted and not be afraid or move away from my leg, to actually understand and give me the movement from a command instead of, again, like it was not a muscled effort.
Right.
That to me was amazing. And when I learned that was what riding and everything was about, it's, you know, for a lot of people it might have been, you know, in the beginning they understood that the way I learned galloping through the plains of Africa, it wasn't like that. You hung on. That's basically how it all worked.
Yes.
So, you know, when you get a 1500 pound animal to prance around on the spot and you've just said with one little push, you've said, prance, you know, with Piaf or whatever we're doing, it's kind of a cool feeling. It's really, it's kind of a neat way to go about, you know, when you get that.
Well, I really love that you said less is more. I think, you know, in general, if we as an industry or a community, a world, whatever you want to talk about, I think less is more is something that, you know, a lot of us could, I know I could, you know, just trying to scale back a little bit and understand the magnitude of our actions and that we don't have to like go like crazy, right? To make a point or to 100%. Get a horse to passage.
Yeah. And there's no timeline. You can't go into, I never get on a horse and go, you know, oh, I'm going to do 45 minutes. I may have unless I'm doing cardio conditioning. I mean, when I say this, I mean the training aspect of it. You know, I come in with my plan for the day, and I may, if I get it in 10 minutes and it's done and everything's good, well, we're done. I may do a little more, but I'm not going to sit there and say we gotta. Sometimes it'll take longer, but it's not a cardio. I split cardio and workouts with training. I'm very specific on, I don't do 45 minute classes every day. I it's like an athlete. I work very closely with who's also my physiotherapist. He's of the horses. He's also the physical training coach of the Spanish soccer team. So he's an athlete. And it's amazing when you break it down and you say, okay, now today's cardio. So we're going to go gallop on the track and we're going to expand lung capacity. You know, we don't do that doing extended canters and pirouettes.
Yeah,
it's a day for cardio, you know. So, and then when you give the horses a chance and that's what I learned about it. They're athletes. I treat them like athletes.
Yeah.
And again, when, you know, if you say I changed as a rider, I've become a trainer and rider, but it's just such an amazing feeling when you train them and you get it. And I know I have people going, but you didn't do anything. I actually did. But I just said, like, I usually the example is a dog, you know, you say sit and it sits down, you know. Yeah. But how did you get there? It's repetition, you know. Yes. Everybody's got, it's the same thing. It's exact same thing with the horses, you know. Awesome. So it's really cool.
Cool.
All right. So one of the hallmarks of your riding career has been your consistency. As you have recorded seasons with top 10 finishes dating back to the early 2000s, what is it in your process that allows you to find that level of consistency and maintain it?
I think it's, again, what I went, I always sort of kind of go back to the same. When I figured out, and I was not always like this, when I started riding, I was really lucky and I had an amazing mare. Her name was Inatana. And I learned in the first year I started dressage to win, which is very good, but also very bad for somebody that's as competitive as I am. So when I got the taste of winning, I was like, oh my God, this is easy. You know, this is not hard, but she was an amazing mare, and you know, you could have put anybody on her and she would have done amazing. So then I started chasing scores and events. So, you know, I'd say, okay, well, what's my goal? My goal is the Pan Americans. My goal is to get 67%. And I would get them, but not well. I don't know if this is going to make any sense. And I was always finding I was chasing. I felt that it was a chase. Until somebody, after I had a not a very good event and situation, it was actually Kira Kirkland said to me, she says, learn to ride first. Mm-hmm. Like, your goal should be to ride the best as you can. When you can do that and you say, this is the best I can do, then set your goals, your competition goals, and if you want to do scores, then you set those. You can't, because you otherwise you were saying, okay, I want to get a 65%. Is that it? Is that all? So, and at first when she had said it, I was just like, well, how do I know I'm the best? How do I know when I'm the best I can do? How can I know? And then, you know, I actually didn't think about it for a while. And then, but I had it in my mind, okay, you're going to be the best you can, and you're going to do the best. You're going to get every horse you can to the best. And it wasn't pushing it the hardest. It's when you say, this is honestly the best this horse can do competitively. So I had horses that a 6 in the walk was the best they could do. I had to accept that. If it was a 7 in the extension, I accepted that. So it wasn't that I was going to try for an 8. No, I had to accept and do the best of what that horse can do and accept it and say, I'm going to go in doing this. When I changed my mindset to think, okay, we're going to go in and do the best that this horse can do, and I can do with the horse both ways, everything fell into place and became easy. And then all of a sudden, I wasn't chasing scores. I had them. I already had the scores. I needed to do what's coming up, Pan Ams, or whatever event I had coming up. I was never having to run after competitions anymore. I actually had my closet was full of all the scores, and I'm like, okay, now what do I want to do with them? So it was when I changed my way to think that way. Like I said, it then was like, oh, what are we doing this year? The scores are there. I'm not, and I didn't. The anxiety a bit of the showing, and oh my God, you know, I've got to push the horse to the max. I was honest about what my highlights, what my horse was good at and what it wasn't good at. I was honest about that. I'm not going to make an extended walk that's a 6. I'm not going to make it an 8. You know, it's never over tracked. It's not going to over track in 2 weeks either. You know, so it was things like that I had to sit back and go, oh, okay. And then I back off the horse, you know, the horse realizes it can just then actually relax and do its job. And it was just sort of really neat the way everything fell into place then. So that's how I've been able to be consistent, because I don't chase. When my horse is ready, I go and do it. And then when we're ready, we go into the competition ring, and I end up being a lot readier, a lot faster, because I'm not setting those goals, I think.
And I would think you'd be a lot more mentally, like you said, when you're ready, but just maybe a bit more calm in your mindset, because I think what you've just shared is fascinating, because wouldn't you agree that most people do it the opposite way? They're like, I'm heading for Pan Ams of, you know, 2023, or I'm going for the Olympics. Well, if you chase that show that has that huge meaning behind it, doesn't it put the pressure even subconsciously that you're not even aware of?
100%. And I know, because I did it for the first, I'd say the first 5 years of my career, that's what I was doing. And and all you're doing is you're calculating scores. Okay, I have this score and that score. What it's like a mathematical problem. It's not, and it has nothing to do with math. It's all about writing.
Yeah.
You know? But I do love the you know, with seeing where can I improve my scores, like where in the test. It's not a lump sum. It's not like, okay, I need a, like now it's going up to 65 for the Olympics or the qualifiers. 67, it's going, the score's going up. It's like, oh my God, I need a 67. It's like, okay, as I am at a 66 with a horse, you know, okay, where in there can I improve it? But it's not this. And if I can't, I have to be, I think you got to be honest with yourself and for the horse's sake too, you know. I'm not saying don't do it, and I'm not saying don't go for it, but you can't look at the numbers. It's not a numbers game.
Yeah.
In this, to get there. And when I figured that out, and it started, and it was hard for me because I'm a fanatical planner and calculator and this and that. And oh my God, I need all the ducks lined up and this. And now you're saying, go learn to figure it out, get it first, and then come back and we'll see. And I'm going, what?
Yeah.
It's the same as when I'm training a horse. I get on a horse and I say, okay, we're going to train a young horse, walk Canada Park. I don't get on it saying, we're going to get it today. I get on it saying, we might get it in 5 minutes. We might get it in 5 weeks. You know, I'm going to take the 5 weeks. There's no time frame on it. There's no time set. So when people come to me and they go, yeah, I need this horse doing this, 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 and this time frame, I'm like, you know what? You better not to me. I can't do it, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the time I actually get it done earlier, because it's not fair on some horses are faster to pick things up than others,
mm-hmm.
you know? So absolutely. That's a little bit, I go on the horses, you know, their attitude and everything. I'll probably get it done in the time frame they want, but I'm not going to put that pressure on me or the horse. So, right. And the more I think of it as give it all the time in the world, I get it done so much faster.
Yes, because you're more relaxed. There's no pressure and you just go with it.
Yeah.
Letting go of control and just letting it be. That's awesome.
Exactly. All right. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Some of your best results have come at the highest levels of competition. Can you talk about how you mentally prepare yourself and what your thought process is when the stakes are the highest? And I just have to highlight, in 2016, you were the first equestrian from the Dominican Republic to take part in Olympic Games. Like, that would have been, you know, a high pressure point.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, it was. I work with sports psychologist, actually Canadian, Robert Schenke. So I've worked for him. I've actually been working with him for easy, I don't want to say how many years, because then it's going to call out our ages, but 20 years, 15 years. And he's been, I think anybody that's an athlete needs, most athletes do work with sports psychologists, because it helps you learn how to learn better. It helps you, it's a whole, again, how you structure riding, my structure training, riding, my mental game, my mental everything. For me, it's life. I do it in life as well. So for me, I work obviously with a sports psych. I work with Robert Schenke. And I think it's also I've learned from myself is just trust my training. You know, we believe in what I'm doing, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, well, we go back to the drawing board. We're not, at the end of the day, it's 6 minutes in the ring. It is a lot of pressure when you've got sponsors and you're in home, you know, you got a home crowd and everything. Absolutely. It's a lot of pressure, but you have to realize when you break it all down and you realize that you just need to do what you're doing at home, instead of doing it in that ring, you got to do it in this ring. It shouldn't be that stressful as much as it is. So right. I have my mental preparation. My main show preparation starts 2 weeks out from show day, and I count down. But I have every minute of the day programmed. And when I do that, then I know I'm ready. I'm as ready as I can be. And it is what it is. You know, I am ready, and I go in there saying I'm ready. And that's how I manage it. And I have to trust. I don't have to. I trust it.
Right.
And when it works the first time, it's more relaxing because I've done it so many times. I know it works. It may not work all the time, but it does work the majority of the time.
Right. I think we're cut from the same cloth. We sound like I love being organized as well. I think it just, you know, some people that have these time issues, like, oh, I don't have enough time for this. My advice to them is, well, get more organized, like put your effort into organizing your time, almost, if you're super serious about something, almost down to that minute, because then ultimately it almost feels like you have more time at the end of the day, because you're not stressed out about where your energy should be going. So that's awesome. But I think what you just shared would 100%. Blow people's minds. They'd be like, what, down to the minute? But yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Even what time during the day then that I need to know. And which was the most difficult for me, was I needed to give myself off time, me time. And I was like, when I first was told that, I was like, what? I have no idea what that is, you know, me time to sit and do what? And I said to Robert, I said, what am I supposed to do? And he goes, nothing. I'm like, yeah, I don't do nothing. What do I do in that time? You know, give me something to do. And it was, but it was so funny because he was like, no, then you need, like, even that is that you give time to yourself. And that, and it's amazing how we don't realize, especially when the horse industry, how it's so easy to get overworked, you know, mentally, physically, and everything, because it's a 24/7 sport for us. We're dealing, if we're not looking after ourselves, which 9 times out of 10 we don't look after ourselves, we're more looking after our animals, and we forget about us. And that for me was very important, that I don't always, I have to confess, I don't always do my me time, but I do try. And I was always organized, but I have like my agendas and everything. And it is from the minute I what time I have to get up, what time I have to eat. When I had that structure written down and in front of me, it was like, okay, mm-hmm. We're good. I know where we are. I know where we're going. It's not like, well, what time do I braid? Well, what time do I do this? No, you're braiding at 6:05. Mm-hmm. It's going to take you 15 minutes. And then you're going to do this. Wow. And then giving yourself a bit of a leeway of 10 minutes in case something goes wrong, you know, and then you get an hour break. It's amazing. I mean, I really drill that into my students, that to do that. And you can watch them. I watch them, the ones that wing it, you know, and the ones that, you know, really sit down then and go, I can wing it too. And a lot of times in the ring, then I always say, you don't wing it in training. You wing it in the ring. You do what you got to do in the ring. So that's the same thing with your schedule. Don't wing this, you know,
right.
Figure out how much time you need for everything. And then your whole mindset is like, then you're relaxed and you're more confident because you know where you're at.
Well, for the listeners, I massaged for you back in 2015. Mm-hmm. That's when you and I first met, when you were up in the Toronto area for the Pan Am Games. And it was such a thrill. And it was just as much fun for me, not only massaging all of your amazing horses, but watching you and watching, like, just, you were very methodical. So as you're sharing with me about everything was down to the time, it now totally makes sense to me, because like Yvonne would come in or one horse would go out. And it was just like this smooth flow that I could, I picked up between you and your staff and your horses. And there was no, you know, 20 minute chit chat waste of time for somebody to socialize. Mm-hmm. Like you were very in tune with what you had to do. So, all right. Thank you for sharing that with me, because now I could see the results of all of that. It was, and all of your horses are so calm. Everybody was just in the flow.
That's another thing. Yeah. It's amazing, because you relay that when you're calm, it's amazing how then it gets passed on to the horses right away.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That was a lot of fun to watch you. All right. So let's talk about what it's like being a dressage rider from the Dominican Republic. That country isn't known for that sport. So what has it been like for you over your career to represent the Dominican and go to other countries where the sport is more well known and supported?
To be honest, in the beginning, logistically, it was very difficult for me, because obviously we don't have any shows in Dominican Republic. So I tried go to Florida for, at that time it was 3 weeks. So that's a long time ago. Wow, it was like three-week shows. Yeah. And then it was 6 weeks. And so in the beginning, I used to travel back and forth with the horses back to Dominican Republic. But thank God, I mean, I have the most incredible support from my family, and they're very much involved in what I do. So when I started moving up the ranks and it was looking like, you know, I actually was going, we were really moving up, it was sort of like an automatic decision that I would stay out more and start becoming more competitive. And yeah, it was difficult in the beginning, because obviously some places I would go, they go Dominican Republic, you know, do they even have horses? And I don't exactly look Dominican either. So there's a lot of confusion going on there,
right,
in all things. But at the end of the day, you have to ride. You got to ride. I don't think it is from what country, where you come. At the end of the day, you can't ski in Dominican Republic either. So if you want to take up skiing, you're going to have to leave. It's a little bit that sort of, I say, you know, right. And I, you know, people go, well, no, it's not fair and this and that. Well, then you can't do the sport. You know, right. I'm a little bit of a hard head with people with that way, because they're like, oh no, we need, you know, more opportunities and that. You got to leave. If you want to do well in the sport, you got to leave like I did. And when you do well in the ring and you show them that you're there and you're competitive, you get what you deserve, I think. I think it's fabulous riding for the Dominican Republic. First of all, I've got the most incredible support with Creso and the Federation and everything. And the Dominicans are all amazing people, and they really appreciate everything I'm doing. And they love seeing it, you know, when I win and the flags up there and everything. So it's like an exotic, amazing journey for me, you know, and it's great. I don't think you need to be German or Dutch or American or whatever to be able to do well. I think you just gotta, you know, pay your dues, put in your time and ride well.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
So at the beginning, when you were coming up and trying to like make a name or get up for yourself, was there a little like, were you that kind of competitive person where there might have been a little bit of, okay, I'll show you. Yes, they're Dominican.
Oh, you better believe it. Oh my God. The more I was told, like, oh my God, that's just a Dominican, I was like, excuse me.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, I can't. Oh no. Oh yeah. No, absolutely. Oh, and I'm terrible that way though. You know, don't tell me I can't do something.
That's this girl too. Yeah. That's so awesome. So what was it like then when you started to have those aha moments when the crowds would, you know, take a double take and watch you and go, whoa, Dominican, this is awesome. What was that like the first time you felt that?
That was amazing. It was It was really amazing. Or even just walking around and then you have people come up and going, oh my God, you know, you're from Dominican, you're the good Dominican, you're the Dominican. And I'm like, yep, I am. It was really cool. It was really cool because it was just, you know, again, it goes back to you gotta ride well. You know, I'm not going to get a better score because I'm German or, you know, Dutch or you got to go out there and ride and ride a correct test. Yeah. And that's at the end of the day, that's what it is. And if you got to leave your, you know, if it's something you want to do and you got to go where the competition is. And that's why I'm during the summers, I'm in Europe, and in the winters I go to Florida. And it is what it is. How long I'll keep doing it, I'm not sure, but for now I'm you know, it's hard to get up there. It is. I mean, the workload, as you know, it is, and the travel and everything, it is hard. I'm not going to, anybody that does it knows that I don't have to say it, but it's worth it. I love it. I think it's amazing. I think the equestrian world we've got, I'm so lucky. I mean, I'm going to Paraguay next week, for the Odesur games in South America. And then I get to do South America, Central America, North America, and then come back over to Europe. So I'm just missing Asia. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah. I'm sure you will. Oh my goodness. Yes. So along that thread, how do you approach the idea of passing along what you know to other riders? Is this something you believe is necessary, especially since dressage is developing in the Dominican?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think you need to, I mean, in the Dominican, there isn't many dressage really. I'll pass on anything to anybody that wants to learn, So you got to want to learn it if you want, you know, I can't make you want to learn it.
Yeah.
So you sort of have to have a little bit of that, you know, I take anybody and everybody on that wants to learn. I have no problems, no secrets. And my God, my goal is that all my students beat my butt in the ring, you know. That to me is more gratifying than winning, you know, when as long as they let me stay a little bit up there. But I'd love it if all my students whoop my butt.
Right.
I absolutely do. I think, I've learned from amazing people and everything. And I think there's so much to learn riding. There isn't 10 lifetimes that you can learn it all, and all the different horses and all the different issues and all the different, there isn't enough time. So the more I think people can go out and become sponges for all this information, I think is amazing. I always tell all my students too, take as many classes from many people as you can, even the ones you don't think are the good classes. I learn more from the bad than the good.
Right.
You know, I learned so much stuff. Well, I'm not ever doing that again. That sort of attitude.
Right.
So yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm the first to say, again, my training, there's no secret, there's no hidden anything in it. It's so basic that people actually think it's boring and frustrating because, you know, it's so basic, you know, basic are what it is.
Basic.
But 100%. But again, you have to want to learn. You can't be the championship chasers to learn. You have to learn to ride. And this people that are around me, they want to go to championships one day, but the first thing they want to be able to do is learn how to sit well, you know, and which is another huge thing that I'm so fanatical about is one seat on the horse, because it's so influential to the riding. And then learn to ride, you know, and that's, but oh yeah, I'm 100%. I'll give my information, you know, I think everybody should learn as much as they can.
That's right. In order to survive in the industry, I think you've got to have more of a community-minded aspect. I mean, no one can ever have not enough support, right? Support. So yeah. And I mean, I follow you on social media and, you know, it's so cool watching you teach too, because it's obvious you love it. You get very, you know, passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And can you share, I'm not exactly sure of the details, but I saw you shared something on social that you were teaching a bunch of young kids where they gave you a red coat.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. They were so sweet. They're actually, yeah, they're students of a student of mine, a girl. They're trainers, a girl that comes in and I help her out. I've helped her out a couple of times and she was just commenting on her kids. Oh, she's got a bunch of kids. And so I just mentioned one day, I said, do you mind if I come and, you know, watch them? She was like, oh my God, seriously? And I was like, yeah, of course. I said, I'd love to. She goes, no, my God, you know, the place and this. And I was like, relax. I said, look, I can maybe give you some pointers. And, you know, with kids, you got to give them gymnastics and, you know, you got to make it fun. So I said, look, just give me a day now that I'm leaving. So I said, just let me know what day. So Saturday. And I said, look, I'm just going to watch you like from behind the scenes. And then I'll give you some pointers of what to do. So I showed up there and they're all lined up. These kids, these 10 kids, beautifully dressed, braided. And I was like, oh my God. And then, well, make a long story short, they asked me to teach them. And I was like, well, let's do some games. They're like, no, we want a class with you. And I was like, oh my God, don't know the kids, don't know the horses and anything. Anyway, so I threw them in a couple of groups. I improvised and this and that. And having these little sponges there that were just like listening to every word and they did everything so perfectly. I was like, oh my God, it was amazing. And it was so nice to see that there's young kids out there like that. I was blown away, absolutely blown away.
Well, yeah, I saw that they gave you flowers and I could tell the appreciation on your face was overwhelming. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was supposed to be standing there and just saying, you know, was talking to her. And then they did all this stuff and the presents and the flowers and the jacket. And I was like, and I was just like, oh my God. And I just taught them how to halt. I taught them how to halt square and where to halt. And I taught them how to do circles. But they were so, I loved it because it was so basic, but they were just like, wow. One girl turned around to me and she goes, I've never done a circle so well before in my life. She's 10. But I was so cute how she was just like, wow. And I was like, oh my God. So I was just like, no, that's why when you say about the learning and you want to give back, I love it. I really do. And I really appreciate when you get these dedicated kids that just want to learn. They're sponges. I think they're great.
Oh, that is a great story. I'm glad I saw that and you could share that. All right. So on the other side of the coin of the human element is the horses. Can you tell us about the relationships you've had with your horses and what they have helped bring to your riding? Can you give us some specifics about Zigzag, Boca Loco, and Aquamarine and what they have meant to you?
Oh my God. Oh yes. Zigzag. Oh, he's one of those, he's the perfect horse. He's one of those horses, and I've had very few of those myself that you can smile through the test and enjoy it and go, wow, that was good. He was just such a perfect, everything you want in a dressage horse, that was Zigzag. And I loved riding him. I just remember being in the test that, again, when they say before you go on the test, people say enjoy it. Well, we don't. I haven't enjoyed other tests. I'll be honest with you. Even the ones I won medals, I didn't come out going, oh, that was great. No. He was. I came out. I would be doing my final extensions and everything, going, wow, God, I nailed that. And he was just such a pleasure to ride. He was a lovely horse, amazing character. In every aspect, he reminded me of what a perfect horse was supposed to be and what a perfect test was supposed to feel like. That enjoy your test, that was Zigzag. I enjoyed every test with that horse. Awesome. It was amazing. Boca Loco, I enjoyed them, but I had to go to the gym 3 times a week.
He was a big boy.
He was a big boy, a big mover.
Yes. I had the honor of massaging him. That was one of the first horses for you I massaged. And I'm like, well, he was such a sweet horse. Oh, yes.
Well, that's just it. He's a powerhouse And you look at him and he's very intimidating. He's huge. And yet he's the biggest gentle giant in the whole world. He doesn't even know how powerful he is and what he could do. He was the most introverted horse I've ever ridden, that didn't dare touch the bit, didn't dare touch anything. And yet he had the most power I've ever ridden in a horse.
Wow.
So he's the one that he taught me how to ride off my seat, because I couldn't touch the mouth. So like, he would go short in the neck and all that stuff. So he taught me how to really ride off my seat. And I had to have a seat to be able to even sit that with him, like stay with him. And he was just, again, he was having such a big monster horse, and yet he was such a timid wow. horse. I mean, scared of a lot. We got him through a lot. I mean, when I first got him, and then until the end, he was a totally different animal. But again, it goes back to that, the calm, letting him know it's going to be okay. There's no rush, you know, it doesn't have to be done yesterday. When you're ready, we're going. And it was, and that but he taught me how to sit. He taught me how to sit and also be ready for all the unexpected, because he was one, he could see everything everywhere. He didn't spook or anything, but he would come up and I'd have to ride a little harder. So he really made me aware of my surroundings when I was riding and all of that. Then we have Aquamarine, she's amazing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying she doesn't have the same quality in her gates as the other two do necessarily, but she'll give it to you. Her and I finally came to an understanding, because she was a difficult one for me to figure out, in the sense that she was so opinionated. She was either no or total go. Like, it was very much, she had like she was bipolar in many aspects, that she would, like, some days you would, it was like being on a school horse, you know, a lazy school horse. She wouldn't even go. And next days I couldn't even put my legs near her.
Wow.
So I really had to figure out her, when she would switch, her mind would switch off. So what I learned from her, especially when I got her on my side, then, is that you have to learn to ride what you want in the ring. So what I'm saying with that is, you know, a lot of people go, oh, well, he gets so excited at the ring, you know, and that, and at home, they just keep him quiet and calm. No, go and ride them excited somewhere, figure out how to ride that, then go to the ring. So she taught me that I kept trying to calm her down, keep her quiet, calm her down. And of course it would blow up in the ring on me. So then one day, it was just one day, I just remember going, she freaked out on me. I don't know, I'm going around the track or something. And I was like, okay, no. We're going to get control of this. So I got control of it. After 10, 15 minutes, I went home. I brought her out the next day. She blew up again. Took me 8 minutes to get control of it. Then 6 minutes, then 3 minutes. Da, 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 da. So now when she blows, I can get back control of her in 10 seconds.
Okay.
So it's not that she would blow. It was figuring out, not avoiding the problem. It was addressing the problem, figuring out, not saying, okay, we're going to make sure this doesn't happen. No. What are we going to do when it happens?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen. So she learned me how to ride that way, you know, to never be, you know, be ready for the unexpected, not just be ready for it, but what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do when the horse gets to that position, instead of saying, oh, calm down? No, we still got a pirouette and we still got a piaf, you know, and how are we going to piaf over there when you're having one of your little meltdowns? So I figured out how to get their trust back on me as fast as possible, and still in 3 meters be able to pull off a movement.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, just
that was what that.
As you're describing her, I never got a chance to massage her. In fact, one day when I was there a couple of years later and you were there, your staff put her in the tack stall for me to massage. And right as I was about to put my hands on her, you're like, uh-oh, no, Yvonne wants you to work on another horse. I'm like, crap. I really wanted to get my hands on her. But yeah, like watching you ride her, or watching her compared to like what I was used to with watching you ride Foco Loco. So then, you know, here's this mare and like her like she had so much action and animation. Was that the energy that you were talking about sort of redirecting?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's so it was the reason she has so much movement is because she literally blows up. You know, and instead of calming her down with that blow up, I'm like, okay, you know what? This blow up, let's passage, let's piaf. Learn, put that energy to good use for me where I need it. So she thinks she's having a meltdown and she's pranced, she's like running on the spot. And I've got the most amazing piaf now because of it. Cause I'm like, okay, well, what are we gonna do with it? I may not have the best walk later, but it was sort of like a balancing thing. But she's, I never thought she would sit in the piaf like she did, but she did by mistake one day because she had a meltdown. She had a temper tantrum. She wanted to go home. I was saying, you're not going home. And I just quietly sat there as she melted down. She sat and went bam, bam, bam. And I saw it in the mirror. I'm like, oh my God, you can sit and piaf. And I was like, So then I tried to, you know, I brought her out of it. And then again, she wanted to have a meltdown. So I just held her in a position that she piaffed as a temper tantrum. And then it put it into something that, like I said again, it ended up positive for me. Mm-hmm. And she thought she was being really smart and getting me. And I'm like, so that with her, it was kind of, that's why I'm saying it was teaching her to, she can have a meltdown, or now it's not, now she's learning to piaf. And but I can feel it in the piaf. There's sometimes she sits more and more and more. And I'm like, yep, you're going to sit more. You can sit more. And she goes, no, I'm not. And I'm like, okay, we've got our out transition.
Okay.
So it's a little, it's a game with her. You know, she wants to, and even in the piaf, when she's going to get all funny, I'll say, well, let's turn it a little bit. You can't see any of this, but it's just this silent conversation I have with her. You know, she tests me, I test her. And then, you know, we get all these, it's just a cool way to manage her stress, and now it's positive for her. Now she's more, she still does her little things, but nobody notices it. Right. It's not as, because she's been and do a whole bunch, but she still does have at the wrong time, the wrong movement, like the wrong reaction. But again, it's a lot better. Yeah.
Awesome. How many years have you been in competition with her now?
I want to say seven. Yeah, I got her as a 10-year-old. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, she's lovely.
It feels like 2 years, but right. it's been, yeah, it was a real building. Yeah, because with her, it was, I'll be honest, many times with her, I was lost. I was just like, I don't know what to do with this. This is maybe too much. Maybe it's, and then the quality wasn't good enough. Like the piaf was not, she wouldn't sit. She'd camp out in the piaf. And then the passage wasn't really that good. And I was like, well, maybe it's not good enough. Hmm. You know, the camp also at one point was kind of like, meh. But again, when she was wound up, when she was having her blow-ups, that's when her quality was, you know how people always say, oh, did you see, you know, the trot around for the prize giving?
Right.
You know, they're always got these, you know, well, let's do the trot prize giving, the trot in the prize giving, let's do it in the test.
Right.
So what do you got to do? You got to wind them up, but you also got to have control. So that was a little bit, and that's what, and again, from her now on all my other ones, I have the same, the ones that need a little more, then it's like, and they have these meltdowns. It's like, okay, let's put it into something positive. This, when they're excited or scared or whatever that they're reacting on.
Yeah. Well, obviously she found the right partner in you.
Yeah. No, she's amazing. I love her. Love her, love her, love her to death. Yeah. Aww. She's one of a kind of mare. Oh my God.
So for our last question, an athlete's ability to overcome can be key to being successful, be it an injury, a slump in confidence, or simply changing life circumstances. How have you dealt with that aspect of sport, and how do you keep that in mind when you need a boost?
For me, I have my sports psychologist. I know I'm honest, and I think it's also honesty, admitting I need a bit of support. I think for me, the first thing was to be able to say, I need help, I need support. That's the first thing. In the beginning, I wouldn't. I thought I could conquer the world, and I was like a one-man team sort of thing. It's not. You need a whole team around you. I've got the most amazing team I've built up. And that's one thing when I'm traveling. For me, I've been to obviously many championships. I've had really good results and everything. And it's not because I don't appreciate my results, not at all. But what I remember and I appreciate of everything, and this is where it goes to my support group, is seeing them in the kiss and cry, and they're biting their nails, they're nervous, they're pacing, that to me is, I have them in my corner. It's my face and I'm the one in the ring, but I'm this much of the whole picture that's there in the end. And that's why when I've been through some pretty sad situations that I've had to deal with, and I've gotten through just because of my support group, you know. And whether it's Kathy Priest, my husband Lorenzo, my daughter's even, she's a major part of my support group as well. They're just there, and we know each other. There's like this silent communication goes on, you know. They know when I'm stressed, they know when I need help in whatever aspect. And it's such an amazing network that works in these teams that you see for athletes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no conversation going. And even, I mean, my groom, who's amazing, Carlos, he knows my mare better than anybody. And he lives for that horse. He's got such an intense, you know, focus on her. But that's why I have no doubt when I'm going in the ring, because I know I couldn't be more prepared. My mare's, he tells me where she's at. Kathy's got got me where I need to be, my physio, everything's in place, but it's not, I can handle it because of them. I couldn't handle it on my own. Absolutely not. And I don't think anybody should pretend to try and handle it on their own. Mm-hmm. There's no need, I think, in my opinion. I tried to for many years.
How did you come back from injury? You had a shoulder injury, didn't you, a few years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two? Yeah, both. I had both. Yeah, I had both of them operated on, right, like one after the other. Yeah, wow. Which you're not supposed to do. Don't do it.
Okay. so mindset and trying to figure out how to make that comeback when you are competitive, yet you being patient and dealing with the pain and everything. How was that for you?
Again, I had Lorenzo Del Pozo is my physio guy, who's also my personal trainer. And he stuck by me, and he was just like, if he says I can do it, oh my God, I'll do it. And and my husband was with, everybody was there for me. I did it because also a lot they're relying on, not, they don't rely on me. That's not the right word. They believe in me. So if they believe in me, well, I got to believe in me, and I can do it, you know, and I just say to myself, you know, you can do it. And they held my hand and got me through it. Yeah, I crashed and burned mentally. Oh my God. Absolutely. I was like, this is it. I'm not coming back. Mm. You know, I did the surgeries, and then I was like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. I shouldn't have done. I forced to do both. The surgeon even wasn't even happy about it, but I said, I got to do this because I'm not patient. That's why this whole thing in training to learn to be patient. Oh my God. For me, it's the hardest thing. Cause I'm not, I'm like, no, do both shoulders. Well, you can't do both shoulders. I'm not going to be able to get out of bed.
Right.
But I did. And I had the most incredible physio help from the day after surgery. They got me going. And yeah, it took me 6 months to be honest, to get over it, even though I was sort of up and about sort of riding again. To lose my condition, my physical condition, that it went so far And at my age, to bring it back, it's not like I was 30 coming back, you know, so it's like an older horse, you know, it takes us a little longer. But I just have an incredible group, you know, behind me going, you know, what's up? Come on, go, you know. And it was, they just kept me going. And now it's a team effort. And I think in life, you've got to find your support group. You know, you need your support group. And I think I always say to my students, I say to everybody, you got to admit when you're wrong, you know, and you've got to admit when you need help. You know, I think I became a better rider as well. Not only when I stopped doing the scores, is when I realized I'm not as good as I thought I was, you know, and I don't know what I'm doing. I admit it. I think I do. And I look like I do. I don't. And even now today, I'll call up Kathy going, I don't know what I'm doing. It's not going right. And then she just goes, do this, boom, it's done. So I think it's being humble and admitting you need, you know, we all need help.
That's amazing. I was going to ask, but I think you've already answered my question. I was going to ask if you could give the listeners one piece of advice that would help them in their day-to-day journey with their horses.
What would I give as an advice? I think being honest, honesty, humble, patient. And again, my main thing is ask for help. Look, get help, like get, you know, there's so many outlets now to get help, whether it's the app Ridely, that's, I think is fabulous, you know, because I'm on that all the time. I think Ridely's right there. You've got the best in the world. You can ask them any questions. You can watch their videos, how to do a circle, how to do a half pass, how to jump, how to do changes. There's so much information out there on social, on media, on now that you can find, but ask and get it. I have a hard time with trainers that are like, no, you're staying with me. You're only riding with me. It's my system and everything. I'm so different, you know, I love watching my students ride with other people. Cause I'm like, oh my God, that's a nice way. That's a neat way to say it. That's a neat way. I think you got to keep asking for help and be real about, you know, what you want. And I mean, we can always say, enjoy it. It's an easy thing, but humble. I'm as for me is the most, especially when it comes to these animals. My mare humbles me every day. She puts me back on my
whether you like it or not.
Whether I like it or not, I'm like, yep, I got it. Yep.
Yvonne, this has been so much fun. You have just been very open and sharing all of your experience. And it's so nice to get a chance to actually sit down and chat with you, even though we're like, there's a 6 hours difference in this conversation. So
yeah,
this has been great. Where can people find you on social media if they want to follow you?
Well, I've got Yvonne Los Is the Muniz. I'm on Instagram and I've also got my Facebook.
Okay.
And I mean, if anybody's ever got any questions in that, I really love to help. I love to see, you know, people being able to move forward. I'm with the FEI now, the athlete's representative for dressage, and with the IDRC. So we have some ask questions, you know. I really would like people to educate themselves as in dressage and in, especially when they're going to go to shows with their equipment, with anything. I really would like people to ask, you know.
Okay.
You know, what's and not assume. I think it's the most important with all of this. There's so much horrible stuff that goes on or out there. I think we gotta keep open-minded and just enjoy this. God, we're so lucky to do what we do. And you know, I get up every day, not every day, some days I'm a little kind of cranky, but you know, there's so much. I mean, I get up in the morning, it's so early and the sun's coming up. Like this morning I went out and I just like, oh, it's just so beautiful, you know.
Yes.
Horses are munching away, the smell of the straw, and appreciate the little things. There's so many little things. for me, walking into the barn, it's the, you know, the smell, the hay, the, you know, the smell, especially in the winter, the warm barn of the horses and all that. It's not, it is going to the Olympics, but I love the little things, you know, and the one horse, one of the few that would knickers at me, because they don't all knicker at me. there is one that I walk in that knickers at me. It's little things like that. I think we got to remember the little things in life, yes, still, and enjoy and everything. That for me, I try and come out of there every day, you know, just with a little reason why I'm still there.
Aww. Well, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much, Tracy, for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.